Hey folks, before we start this week's episode, we gotta tell you about this special event coming up June 20th at 9 p.m. at Naked City Brewery and Tap House in beautiful Seattle, Washington. That's right, Air Raid Live number 2, featuring comedian Alicia Sanchez, Mikey and Maddie, and Pickwick, man. It's gonna be so much fun. We had a great time last year. It sold out super quick, so get on it. Go to brownpapertickets.com, type Air Raid Live into the search bar, and you should find it right there. Or you can visit www.air-raid.net, click on this episode's blog, and find the link. Buy your tickets. They're $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 252 in what is now officially a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Zach Gore of the band Bright Lines will be joining us here in the backyard in just a little bit. We're gonna be playing stuff off of their new release called When We Arrive, and they have arrived. They has arisen, something like that. Yeah, it's a great album, and I can't wait to share it with you. I can't wait to share this this wonderful chat that we had. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Talk a lot, man. It's a good conversation. So stick around for the whole thing. Let's see. Man, hot in Seattle right now. I am boiling in this studio right now. But you know what? One good thing that comes with this warm weather is barbecue season. That's right, man. We had our first and very successful barbecue last night. I think I'm getting really good at this whole barbecue thing. Let me tell you. Steak, chicken, shrimp skewers, fresh shrimp skewers, man. Fresh shrimp on skewers. That's what I meant to say. Man, I'll tell you what. I made this like lime juice, garlic, cilantro, kind of like, not a glaze, but what would you call that? It's just, you know, it's like this sauce that I put over the shrimp, and it turned out so good, and people were like, I don't want to brag, but people were complimenting me on the tenderness of the steak and the flavoring on the chicken thighs that I barbecued, and also the shrimp. I don't want to seem like, you know, I'm really high and mighty now that I am a grill expert, but it is what it is. People really, really seem to enjoy when I make food for them. I think they even wanted to pay me, but I refused. No, that's a lie. That's a lie. But it is, man. I think I'm getting good at this. I think maybe a food truck is in my future. I could do that. Barbecue. Oh man, that's what this city needs, man. Is my barbecue truck. June 20th is coming up rapidly, folks. We've got the live show coming up, and we are over halfway sold out. We're actually even over like 3/4 of the way sold out. So get on it quick. Go to brownpapertickets.com, like we said right there in the pre-roll, and type in Air Raid Live. Get your tickets. They're $12. We've got comedian Alicia Sanchez, music by Mikey and Maddie, and great conversation, by the way. I love those guys. One of my favorite bands in Seattle, and also another one of my favorite bands in Seattle, Michael and Galen of the band Pickwick, are going to be there as well. And we're going to be doing some Star Wars trivia with audience participation. It's actually not even just trivia. It's a drinking game, and it's going to be super fun. And you guys, the people in the audience, are going to be playing along with us, man. And it's going to be a lot of fun. $12 in advance at brownpapertickets.com or $15 at the door. But let's try to make this thing sell out, shall we? Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun right there at Naked City Brewery here in Greenwood, Seattle. Okay, let's get started with this, okay? This is a little bit of a longer chat. Zach Gore came to the backyard a couple weeks ago, and we just had to, you know, really hit it off, man. He's a great dude, and he's got a good album out right now. Right, once again, it's called When We Arrive by Bright Lines. Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E, and you can go to their website, brightlinesband.com, and get yourself a copy, or go to your local record store. Should be there as well. Right? Probably have some sort of Bandcamp page, all that good stuff. Like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter. It's all there, folks. It's all there. All right. Brightlinesband.com. Okay. We're going to go, let's see. First musical break, The Gap by Brightlines. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Back in a moment. When you're 800 miles away from the one you love, from the one you love, you can talk for a bit. Every subject's inadequate for the one you love, for the one you love.
I am one of those people, like everybody like always complains about like the people that take their shoes off on the airplane. Are you one of those people?
You know, I usually wear intentionally very loose shoes on the airplane,
right,
so I don't
right.
have to take them off, but
I don't see what the big deal is with taking them off. Like I hear like close friends of mine too, like get really, really annoyed when people try to get comfortable on an airplane. I see like the wearing the pajamas thing. Like, I would never do that.
Really? See, I think that's in the same category.
You think it's taking your shoes off?
I don't have a problem
while
with
you're
either,
at your
actually.
Seat. While you're at your seat. That's not the same thing. That's totally different.
Yeah, I guess it can be done and undone much more easily.
You know what I've done?
What's that?
I've actually taken my shoes off at a restaurant.
See, I think it's hidden, and if it doesn't smell, then it's not a big deal.
Right. Now I'm like super self-conscious.
No, I think it's fine.
Zach Gore from the band Bright Lines joining me here in the backyard. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming over on this like super sunny summer day.
It's so beautiful.
It is, man, but it's making me a little bit worried. Like we're gonna turn into California up here in Washington here pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know? We're gonna start having water problems.
I think since half of this city is made up of Californians, I think that it would be a welcome change for a lot of people.
I'm sure. Are you born and raised a Washingtonian?
I was born on the East Coast, but my family moved here when I was very young.
Okay, actually, so you're pretty much like
this photo on the back of our CD here.
Oh yeah.
Is on our road trip across the country. That's my mom in that photo.
Whoa. Yeah. Is that an old Ford Crown Victoria station wagon?
You know, I couldn't. I think that it's a, that might be it. Yeah, I think it is a Ford.
Dude, my parents had that same station wagon, except it wasn't, we're looking at the back of the Bright Lines brand new album, which is out now by the time you hear this. It's called When We Arrive. And it's fantastic. And on the back of this CD is a picture of his parents' station wagon hauling like an old, one of those collapsible campers.
Yeah.
Camper trailers. But my parents had a station wagon exactly like this, but it was just tan. It was just the color tan. It wasn't a dual tone. And it had like the seats in the back that would flip up.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you have that?
Those were the best.
They were awesome.
As a kid, you fought for those seats.
Right. Yeah. Right. Everybody wanted to be in the back. And it was huge. Like it had like this station wagon had like a V8 engine in it. Yeah. We went on a road trip once up to Canada as a family and we pulled like our Bayliner boat with it.
Yeah.
You know, and it did awesome.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that it hauled that trailer.
Yeah,
forever.
Across the country. So where did you start out? Where was the...
I was born in Boston.
Boston?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then my dad was a general contractor, builder.
Get right up on that microphone. Sorry. There, buddy.
My dad was a general contractor and builder.
Okay.
And the economy kind of collapsed in Boston around that time, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And then our family moved out to the Northwest.
So, no shit. So how old were you when you guys moved out here?
6 years old.
6 years old? So you still have memories of being on the East Coast?
Definitely.
Then, right?
Definitely. Kind of limited.
Yeah.
You know, just moments more than any real succinct kind of ideas of what it was actually like there as opposed to anywhere else.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, definitely memories of my life there.
So was it as a 6-year-old, can you remember it being like being uprooted from everything you know? Was that like a positive experience for you as a kid?
You know, I don't think it was debilitating, but I definitely remembered like a lot of things fondly when I was younger about my home in Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
And my friends there. But I think a lot of it was kind of like more dreamlike than it was, you know, realistic.
Really?
Yeah. But I think that now I couldn't have been happier. You know, I think of myself as having been completely raised here.
Yeah.
I'm from the Snoqualmie Valley, like 40 minutes east of here.
Okay.
And that was a beautiful place to grow up too.
Sure.
So I definitely, you know.
Well, it's much more rural than what you were probably used to well, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, and it definitely, like my upbringing in the Snoqualmie Valley was definitely pretty rural. A lot of farms. My best friend, he actually went away. He went to college and worked elsewhere for some time. And now he's back on the farm that he was raised on and is taking it over.
Really?
Yeah. And like a really great little organic farm. And he's got a wife and two kids. And so, yeah, it's definitely a kind of a different life there than in the city or a more urban place.
Well, sure.
Even
but
only
like,
40
I mean,
minutes away.
But yeah, but like, I mean, where you were at in Boston was pretty urban, right?
Sure.
Were you right in the city?
You know, we weren't, but we definitely, it was definitely, a different experience.
Sure.
And I'm not sure that I could, compare them because, you know, being anywhere as a 5-year-old, I think that you know, as long as there are walls around you, you know, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. And your parents are there, your family's there. Totally. Like, you still feel like it's like, yeah. I get that.
Yeah,
I get that.
At a certain point, you know, whether it's Alaska or Hawaii or Boston or Seattle, it's kind of,
it wouldn't have made a difference for a 6-year old Zach Gore.
Yeah.
I just always remember like being in elementary school and then there'd be like the new kid that like shows up, you know, out of nowhere.
You know,
and
now,
just remembering as a kid, like just thinking that that would just be the hardest thing in the world.
I think that, I think it can be, for me, it was an easy transition. It was, you know, I'm still pretty good at making friends, and I was good at making friends as a kid. But I think it might have been harder if I hadn't been. And I think that in some ways, I don't know. I think so we moved over the course of a summer, and I joined like some groups. Like I think I was in playing soccer in the summer before school. And so I already started to meet people and kind of game, and my mom was meeting friends.
Well, that's a good idea,
and,
right?
But now I work in a school, and my partner is also a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I think we've talked about this, and I think that it might actually be easier to move in the middle of a year, because then what happens is all the kids are like, oh, this is the new kid. We get to like, you know, show them around and show them our favorite, you know, and like really, and they really, become like this object of desire, you know, like this new person that you like really, so that it's like being a new kid in the middle of a school year can be like a really,
well, I think there's a breaking point for that. Like there's an age limit more so
probably.
Like you get into the high school years and you're the new kid and that sucks.
Yeah. I
because
bet so.
Everybody's
Did
looking
you
at you weird. Be the guy that looked at the new kid weird
or be the kid.
No, never was the kid, because I always, you know, we stayed in the same town throughout my whole upbringing, you know, but I do remember like, you know, new kids coming into the high school and just not having a lot of luck making friends because everybody was so tight knit. Of course, I grew up in like a really small area too.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was really, you know, had grown up together.
Yeah, you went to elementary school, middle school, and high school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, you're there throughout the whole time with the same people that you know, and then somebody new gets thrown into the mix. And there were a couple guys that came in. This one guy whose name is like Tucker or something like that. And he was this straight edge, like skateboarder kid that I thought was just the coolest motherfucker ever. And I was just like, I'm going to make that guy my friend, because I didn't have a whole lot of cool friends, you know? So I was like, I'm going to be the guy. I was like Ducky, basically,
totally.
You know, and tried to make this guy my friend. Didn't work out.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. I ended up just being
his
chauffeur.
He was a new kid though.
He was a new kid.
And
yeah.
So what was the difference?
He started taking advantage of my kindness, and I became his chauffeur.
Oh.
And then like, I would be like, hey Tucker, you know, let's go hang out. And he's like, oh, you know, I'm going to this party, but man, I could really use a ride over there. You're like, all
would
right,
you get
I'll
to go
take
to the party?
It. No, fuck no. It was awful. Awful experience.
Oh, man.
Would love to look that guy up and just be like, look at me now. Wait, I have a podcast.
At least as cool as you.
Yeah, right. I was able to stand up on a surfboard a couple of times in college. Fuck you. Yeah. So you move out here.
Yeah.
When does music enter little Zach Gore's life? Like, were your parents into it?
You know, yeah, my parents definitely were avid music
fans. I'm sure you
fans.
Listened to a lot of music on that road trip.
That's probably true. I don't really remember though, but I imagine that's definitely true.
Sure.
We always had the Beatles playing.
Yeah. Dad, big Beatles fan.
Absolutely. Yeah. My dad was kind of classic rock. You know, he loved the Beatles, you know, in all phases, but definitely like the kind of Sergeant Pepper, some of the later stuff as well. My mom was kind of more the Joni Mitchell, the Paul Simon, the kind of folky 60s, 70s kind
of. Well, that's sorry. That's cool.
Yeah. So we definitely had, you know, a lot of music growing up, and but it wasn't until I think I got my first guitar when I was 16 years old.
So high school age?
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't really learn to play it. I took a couple lessons, but it wasn't, you know, I was learning scales and I was learning chords, but without real, like, songs that I was interested in playing at that time. So I didn't really do it, and it wasn't inspiring to me. And it wasn't until I went to college and I was surrounded by people who were playing really great songs.
Yeah. And, where'd you go to college?
At the Evergreen State College.
Oh, you went to Evergreen in Olympia.
Totally.
I just had a conversation with my dad this weekend.
Uh-oh.
About how I wanted to go to Evergreen.
Oh, really?
When I was like looking at colleges and stuff. And he was like, I do not want you going here. Like, we took the tour and stuff, and he saw kids in dreadlocks and was like, you can't do this. You can't do this. Which is probably better for me because I was not a self-starter.
Yeah, that's really the key. At Evergreen, you get a lot of different kinds of kids, but the ones who really thrive there are the ones who can decide what they want to do and, like, really just go for it. And then there's kind of infinite resources there at Evergreen for you to be able to do that.
Yeah.
But if you're, you can also just go and kind of float by and, you know,
get a degree in basket weaving,
right,
or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know, I think that it kind of gives Evergreen a bad name because those people in the end leave with the same kind of thing on paper that anybody, you know, the people who work their asses off and who spend you know, really delve into something that is unique and interesting and really get the kind of support that Evergreen can offer to do something that's really cool and really different.
Well, definitely has like a major stigma.
Definitely. And you know,
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is that, you know, I lived in New York City for a few years and I've lived in, you know, I've traveled throughout the country, and whenever I've told people in Washington that I went to Evergreen, there's always like a, oh, you hip, you know, like it has very mixed results, you know,
right,
people went there or like know a really good friend who went there and had a really good experience, and then their reaction might be different. But for the most part, it's like, you know, whatever you say, I can just like throw out with like a grain of salt. But outside of the state of Washington, it has a pretty remarkable, pedigree. I mean, people really think of it as a fantastic place.
Well, it's funny you say that because that's what brought that conversation up with me and my dad. He had met somebody from, I think it was like, God, I want to say it was like Connecticut or something like that, you know? They were talking about Washington, and he kind of integrated himself into the conversation saying, I'm from Washington, blah, blah, blah. And they were talking about Evergreen, and he was like, yeah, my son almost went there and I talked him out of it. And they were like, why? You know, so, it's funny, because it does sound like, it has much better,
reputation. Is the word I was looking for.
In the rest of the country. But definitely has some sort of stigma here in Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, man, Matt Groening went there.
Yeah.
Michael Richards, the guy who played Kramer from Seinfeld went there. Who else? Who are some other notables?
Linda Barry is a pretty famous comic artist.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez.
What does she draw? I'm not totally familiar with that.
She created Linda Barry. Hey Arnold, but she's also done a lot of like... a lot of hand-drawn, like, just cartoons.
Oh, okay.
And let's see, who else? There's been a ton of musicians, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, Nirvana has theoretically played their first show in K-Dorm. It's one of the apartment-style houses at Evergreen. You know, huge. You know, Sleater-Kinney got their name from a road.
Right down the street. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a huge music... oriented school.
Yeah. So what did you go there to study?
Film production.
Film production.
Yeah.
And is that what you like majored in?
Yeah, I did. I studied film throughout my time there, and I did, you know, I went there as opposed to a more traditional film school because I cared about the context, you know, more than just the, because I'd been doing, I'd actually been doing video production stuff since middle school, since sixth grade. So I kind of already had a pretty good foundation of video production kind of knowledge.
Cool.
And so I was going there to kind of, you know, learn new things about the world and about myself in addition to, you know, continuing my education in film.
Right.
So
right.
it was a good choice for me in that. And, but yeah, I studied, so I did a lot of kind of just liberal arts stuff, history and that sort of sociology and
yeah.
politics.
So what was the goal? Documentary film?
I didn't
film
really know.
Or
yeah,
like...
I did a lot of stuff there. I did documentary. I did like weird experimental shit. I did animation stuff. I did...
What kind of experimental stuff?
You know, like scratching on film. And,
okay.
Putting it, putting actual film through different chemicals to change colors and, matching music and found sound and like just all sorts of found video footage and shooting stuff on all sorts of weird ways to like create kind of a united vision of some kind.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of stuff fascinates me. We had Lynn Shelton in here a while back. She's been on the show a couple times, but
cool.
The last time she was here, she talked about how, one of her student films was like, the basis of her film was she had just had her son and she made this film about like, how psychedelic breastfeeding was from what I can remember. And, it sounded very strange.
Yeah.
And I still want to see it.
Yeah, definitely.
I just want to see.
She's gotten too Lynn's popular interpretation to let that stuff out, probably.
Yeah, though. I know, right?
Miranda July is one of my, I love her. Are you familiar with her?
No,
She's the writer and director and producer and actor in Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Oh,
she's,
right, okay.
But she's a very accomplished artist of all kind of ways. She's a Renaissance woman, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But she's done, like, back at Evergreen, she did a lot of performance art stuff.
Okay.
So really, sometimes really weird. So her character in Me and You and Everyone We Know is, I think, semi-autobiographical. She's, so she makes kind of video art and performance art stuff that isn't even half as weird as some of the stuff that I've seen the Miranda July's, but that stuff is not out there either, because I feel like once you reach a certain level of celebrity, you have to like really contain your history so that it doesn't come back to bite you.
You can't let it out.
Yeah.
You can't let it. You so don't want that on your IMDb page.
Those Lynn Shelton videos may be lost forever.
I think she said she still has them.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah. I only got to see the Miranda July stuff because I happened to have a friend in common.
Oh, really?
That somehow had them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, what would you say would be your favorite like film genre?
Oh man.
Do you still like when okay, this is I think you know, I've always wondered this for people who are cinephiles
mm-hmm.
or film buffs, you
sure.
know. Like, I consider myself a movie fan,
yeah.
but I would never call myself a cinephile,
totally.
Right? I would say I am a movie fan,
yeah.
okay? I will watch anything, right? Mm-hmm. If it suits my fancy. Like the other day, I was super sick, and I was laying in bed, and I just turned on Netflix and just watched, like, some really... really shitty stuff, like
yeah, totally,
like you know, like Deep Impact,
oh,
or
man,
something
I
like
love
that.
Those
you know, I love natural disaster movies.
Oh man,
they're the best.
I love natural disaster films too.
Good, I'm sure this makes me happy.
I actually, my friend Jordan, who I met at Evergreen, and he's a great dude. One year for his birthday, I actually found an 8-pack, I think, of VHS tapes, and they were all disaster movies.
Nice.
So it had Deep Impact, and it
Armageddon.
Had Armageddon, and it had Twister, and
Twister. I haven't seen that one forever.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna say finish at No. Haven't seen that one. That's also really awesomely bad.
Yeah. The Core.
Yeah.
2012.
Oh.
One of my new
favorites. I haven't seen 2012.
2012? Oh, yeah. It's great, dude. It's great.
Did that come out in 2012?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. there's a new one coming out. Have you seen this? It's called San Andreas.
No.
Yeah.
Is it earthquake based?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. It's got to be.
San Andreas. Yeah. And then there was, what was it? What was the, Volcano. And then there's, what was the one that took place with Tommy Lee Jones in L.A.? Like the La Brea tar pits were actually like a giant volcano or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember what that one was called.
Because that, that was a big, big stack of VHS tapes. I don't know how many of those films are that there are, but at least that are awesomely bad like those.
So you find music. You find music in college.
Yeah, I had roommates who, you know,
you were taking some classes on guitar too, or something.
I took some lessons in, when I was in high school, but then kind of stopped taking lessons because they weren't doing it for me. And then in college, I just started just broke out my guitar and started playing with friends who were much better musicians than I was.
Sure. Yeah.
And jamming along to songs that I cared about, I was put at ease around music. It wasn't like a big scary thing in that kind of setting.
So it wasn't scary to like play with new people and other people?
No.
Even though you weren't like trained on it?
Totally. Yeah, it was a pretty accepting, community of people. I might have just lucked out, but I think that it really helped nurture my love of music and guide my musicianship. And I always...
Well, you seem like a pretty positive person, too. Like, you don't suffer from real self-esteem issues.
No, I don't.
A whole bunch.
No, but I think that the thing that really spurred it was I've always been a writer, and I think I was always meant to be a songwriter, and I tried a lot of other kind of writing, and I still enjoy writing other things as well, but I think music became the vehicle for my writing that really worked. When I was inspired by playing along with friends in college and I started to learn more about music, then it kind of gave me that vehicle to be able to tell my stories and stuff.
Well, that's great, man. Yeah. Let's hear, let's go with our second musical break. We're featuring music off of the new Bright Lines album, of which Zach is the front man for. Right? You would say that, frontman?
Yeah.
I can say that?
Totally. I think that's a pretty fair thing. I don't think anybody would find fault with that.
I always feel weird about it.
It seems I think of a frontman as being like this, I don't know, like you either have to be
leather
Mick
jacket
Jagger.
Wearing, yeah. Like swinging dick. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, it comes with a little prima donna kind of like, yeah.
Guitarist and vocalist Zach Gore of the band Bright Lines. The new album is called When We Arrive. And this song is called Haunted, and we'll be back in just a moment with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Hope dots broken hearts in her wing. She truly believed someday that she'd settle down. Till that day, she'd find her loving each time. Everything you ever wanted.
only words. They meant only words. Aaron was fine with that plan at the start. He could try his best to disconnect from his heart. But as time went on, he knew his roots had grown deep. Before long, he'd tell her what he really means, he'd say.
Playing in bands and things like that? Like,
no, I started
like officially in bands.
No, not at all.
Not even in college.
And I, you know, truthfully, I think the songs I was writing were elementary, but they were good, like backbones. And I think if I'd been in a band, that maybe the band would have been able to shape them into something good.
Mm-hmm.
But on my own, it didn't quite sound ready.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, a lot of kids who start playing guitar or something when they're much younger, you know, I always wish that kind of I had, you know, my parents had been more forceful and had me start learning piano or start learning guitar at an early age.
Do you think, though, that would have turned you off from something?
See, I don't know.
If you were forced into doing something like that?
I don't know.
That's what I've always wondered, too.
And that's one thing that, you know, I'm due for a baby pretty soon, and
yeah,
that's something that I'm kind of thinking about too as I kind of approach that.
Well, this has been like a serious question of mine to a lot of musicians, especially like female drummers, because I want somehow to guide my daughters into being female drummers, because that is the coolest shit.
It is the coolest thing
that you can ever have,
it is,
right? And it sounds so weird, like that. I was like, no, she can't play guitar. I want her to play drums. Because what parent in their right mind wants to have their kid beating on a friggin' drum set all day? But
it can be, you know, it can be out here in the studio.
Yeah, that's true, man. I just set it up out here, and that's fine. You can pound away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people have said, don't force it.
Yeah.
You can't force it, because then it just turns them
off.
Yeah,
and I wonder, you know, I got here eventually, and I wonder if that would be the case for anybody, or what, you know. I definitely think that, for example, my dad, I think would have been a really excellent musician if he'd ever had that opportunity afforded to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, as it is, he sits in his truck, and he has, you know, harps, harmonicas, and he just jammed.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he's one of those guys.
A few different keys, and he'll pull it out and he'll play.
Yeah.
You know, he's never had any kind of training.
Uh-huh.
But he's damn good at it. And you know, and I think that you know, he was just, as growing up, he was a great artist too, and he was never afforded that opportunity. You know, he was always told that he had to do something, you know, more worthwhile.
What's he do?
Well, he worked as a general contractor and builder.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you said that
time,
earlier. Yeah, yeah.
Which was actually ended up being the most creative thing that he could have done, probably, while still, you know, not being an outright creative, at least singly creative.
Sure.
Yeah. So he was, you know, he did a lot of designing stuff. Now he does some of that still, but He's not working as much.
Getting close to retirement.
He's trying to.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I wish I was there.
Yeah.
I wish I could retire now at the age I'm at now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
35 would be a great age to retire.
By the time you retire, it's like, then you need to just be sitting around and not doing anything.
Yeah.
Can you, like, retire for 20 years in the middle of your life and then work for the, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So when does the first band come along? After college?
I started playing out as a, like, singer-songwriter in college,
mm-hmm.
and I opened, you know, for bands who came and played at Evergreen.
Uh-huh.
So I got to the point where I was, you know, getting paid gigs, which was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And that
That's
happened
good.
Pretty early. You know, I'd only been playing guitar in earnest for a couple of years. So, you know, a lot of my friends who'd been doing it for 15 years by the time they were in college.
Did you ever play Les Voyeurs?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that place. It was
I do too, but I had
the
worst
customer customer service.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a pretty weird experience playing there one time.
Oh really?
Yeah. I've told that story so many times on this show. I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a weird venue.
Yeah.
Weird venue, man. Yeah. Yeah. But so that's cool. So you were getting up and did you have to kind of force yourself to do it? I mean, were you always just kind of like up for getting in front of people and playing?
Yeah, that never really, you know, I think the first time I played at like the Crocodile or the first time I played at the Tractor,
uh-huh.
those were like big moments.
Bigger venues.
You know, and that got me a little nervous. Or like maybe the first time that I got in front of people in general, I was a little nervous. But I did musical theater in high school and in middle school.
So you're used to getting up in front of people.
I was pretty comfortable with that.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's definitely a different thing when it's your own art that you're presenting, and there's a certain further level of, I don't know, vulnerability.
Sure.
That comes with that.
Sure.
But the actual being in front of people was not so much the issue for me.
Gotcha.
So I guess the first band came about of my music in, you know, in earnest, really only after I moved back. So I graduated from college and then I moved to New York City and lived there for a few years, and I played music out there sometimes, mm-hmm. with other people, sometimes supporting other people's music.
Why'd you move back over to the East Coast?
I just really wanted to challenge myself. I think that I'd felt really comfortable, growing up, and I felt really comfortable, in this like cushy little town in Olympia, and New York seemed really scary.
Stir it up.
And I kind of wanted to scare myself a little bit, I think. And so I moved out there and I didn't know anybody. And I didn't have a job and I didn't have a place to live.
You wanted to relive that 6-year-old Zach Gore coming into elementary school, not knowing anybody.
Maybe. Yeah. And I also, if I was going to do film stuff,
uh-huh.
I felt like I had to be either in New York or LA.
Yeah.
And LA didn't really appeal to me. So New York it was.
And
I went out there with a, curriculum that I'd built to teach video production to at-risk teenagers in New York. And so my goal was to not only do film and music on my own, but also teach film to kids.
Yeah.
And I was so jazzed about this curriculum, and I was like, I'm going to change the world. You know, I'm going to make all these kids' lives just like so much better. I'm going to save them, you know? And I was this 21, 22-year-old kid, and I just had no idea. But
were you able to find work in the film industry out there?
You know, I did. I actually,
yeah?
I did. I ran cameras for reality TV shows, and
what?
Like I
really?
Shot the auditions for America's Got Talent.
Shut up!
Yeah, that was.
You're kidding.
It was in its second season, I think.
So this was only what, like, not even 10 years ago.
So that was, it was 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I moved out there. So
gotcha.
It was seven years ago when I moved back to Seattle.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't realize America's Got Talent has been on the television.
Is it still on?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. Because I just heard American Idol is entering its last year. And
thank
that's been
God.
On, that's been on for a
oh
long
my God.
Time.
I didn't know that, but thank God. So you used to, you worked on like reality shows and stuff. That's so weird.
It's so weird. Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
No, I didn't.
Can you say what shows you worked on?
America's Got Talent.
Okay.
And,
I guess that's kind of a reality show that's in that same vein.
Yeah. Reality and like, I guess a talent show.
Sure.
Kind of.
It's got talent in the name. It should be.
Yeah. And I just worked, I just did like I was a for hired like day guy, you know, like PA kind of stuff for a lot of things. And I, while in New York, I also work, I did a lot of stuff with like College Humor. And they were doing original video stuff there.
Really? That's a cool website. That's gotta be pretty fun to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of really, funny young people. It was a cool crowd to kind of get in with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what other reality shows were you working on though?
Just the
talent show?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I honestly can't remember. I would go for a long day on one set, and then I would be somewhere else for.
So you were getting contracted out.
All the time I was also working three other jobs. You know, in New York at the time, you know, and still certainly, but for me at that time in my life, you know, I was living paycheck to paycheck, and that meant that in New York that I had to work a shit ton because rent, you know, the cost of living was so high. And so I did a lot of stuff. Yeah,
that's insane, man. So what's your takeaway from that business?
You know, I think for me, I was always you know, I studied film and I wanted to be a storyteller. I wanted to tell stories. I was interested in the art. You know, that's not necessarily always what I care about watching or being, you know,
sure.
If I'm going to make something, I want it to be really, genuine, like a genuine projection of the world. And, it could be really different than the way that I see it, or it could be but telling a real story is important to me. And I think that, if you don't have that backbone going into working like really for really stupid TV, you could really feel depressed.
So were you?
No, because no? I viewed it in a really surface-y way.
A stepping stone.
I thought that, well, I need to make money, and this is a marketable skill, you know.
Right.
Because I could run a big old camera, and I knew how to do it, and I knew that that was something that people would pay me to do, but it wasn't something that I actually like. I only learned how to do that stuff so I could tell stories.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Did you I'm so curious about this.
Yeah.
Like, was anybody a super huge asshole?
Nobody that I was. So on the set. So I actually did, oh God. Something else with Regis Philbin.
Okay.
I don't even remember what it was, but he was hosting it.
Okay.
Or something.
Yeah.
And, I went into the catering area. I was on a lunch break
and he was just, and wolfing down the Havarti.
He was sitting there and it was, a giant table. It was a round table and there were like 14 seats. And he was sitting alone at the other side. And I don't really care about Regis Philbin. He's still alive, right? I would feel bad talking about
him. I think he might actually be dead. Oh, I think geez. He might have died in the last couple of years.
Okay. Well, I don't want to talk shit about him. But he just seemed like a really lonely man.
Oh, really?
You know,
I walked in, sad.
He just seemed so desperate to talk to me or anyone.
So did you sit down and talk with him for
a while? I sat across the table and we had like 20 minutes where it was just the two of us sitting at this table in a on a busy set, but it was like in this weird room off the side that for whatever reason he and I just had the same lunch break. And
well, that's kind of cool.
It was cool. But I definitely, you know, he on TV, he seems like this just like super, I don't know.
He's kind of a firecracker kind of guy. Yeah, totally.
And, And that was not the impression that I had.
Oh, no. That makes me sad, man, that a guy like Regis Philbin is kind of lonely.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, you get to a certain point in your life in that business, and it probably is very lonely, you know? Like, maybe. People feel like they can't talk to you because you're on a different plane or something.
I think that might be true for a lot of celebrities in general. I think that's a hard thing, because you can't just trust anybody to be a friend without... Because I've actually, you know, I've known a few people who have gotten famous enough that to the point where they have people who are trying to get to know them just to kind of
say
get
that
in
they
with
know
them.
Know them or yeah.
Or like
yeah,
try
totally.
To get something, you know, like leverage the friendship toward like personal gain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a hard thing when you're that celebrity to like be on guard for, because it kind of keeps you from being genuine or like being able to have just a real simple friendship, you know?
Yeah. I can totally see that. But I know a couple people that are like that too, that are in these weird positions where you can tell they're seeking some ulterior motive.
Like a status.
Yeah. And it bugs the living shit out of me.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm gonna start going down a road that I can't come back from. So, okay. So I'm going to shut that topic down real quick. I can get myself into trouble sometimes. Loose lips sink ships.
Yeah, that's true.
Zach, that's true. Yeah. So, so you move back here.
Yeah.
From New York.
From New York.
Were you disenchanted with like the film industry, or were you just like, I need another change of pace?
And I actually, you know, I did that for the kind of first year, and then I actually started teaching film to kids.
Oh, you were, you did get into that.
I did. Okay. For a long time, people were just, you know, I would present it to this place and that place, and they'd be like, yeah, sounds like cool program, and then sorry, we're gonna not have money for that,
right?
Probably.
Right.
And then the YMCA hired me to do an after school program, and I ended up doing that for a long time. And then I substitute taught in Brooklyn Public Schools,
okay,
for a while. And so I kind of moved out of the film production landscape in New York. And then I started dating a girl who had been going to school in New York at NYU, and then she moved back to Seattle. So
you moved back over here for a girl?
Not entirely. I was also it was hard. It was really hard, as you might expect, to be a substitute teacher in Brooklyn.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. So it was hard work, and the pay wasn't super great. And
yeah.
It was a lot, you know, it was expensive to live there. So I was working so hard and not doing all of the things that I really wanted to be doing. And my family was out here.
Sure.
And
sure.
This girl that I was in love with also was out here.
Just so, happened to be.
So it happened to, all coincide, and it was a good move for me. You know, we actually broke up only, of course, like a couple months later. I'm really glad that I'm back out here. I always kind of viewed it as an inevitability. Like, I didn't think that New York would be a forever thing. I thought it would be a temporary thing.
You seem you're kind of like a family guy too. Like, you need to be close to family.
You know, I definitely, like, my mom definitely missed me. You know, wanted me here. I did too.
Yeah.
But I think that, it was just time.
Yeah.
More than anything. I think I was just ready for that experiment to be over.
Yeah.
And I actually lasted longer than I imagined I would initially.
That's always good. You've met a goal at least, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when does Brightline start then?
So I played around Seattle for a couple years, mm-hmm. Just solo, and I would play shows, or like I played at the Blue Moon, you know, just like little teeny clubs,
doing
bars.
Your solo thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I got tired of doing it. You know, it's not as much fun. You know, like I was going to all my friends' shows who were like these rock and roll bands, and they were playing these rad shows, and I was like, man, why can't I do that? And I was friends with all these musicians, and I was like, why, you know, like, how is it that you get to play, you know, like, this is... So I just started booking show. I came up with a name, and I started booking shows as Bright Lines, and we would play in whatever kind of capacity, you know, like, so I would just ask my friends, hey, can you play with me on this date? And we would practice, you know, as a duo. So, like, my brother joined in, and he and I would play, and he would play drums, and I would play guitar, and it would just be a duo sometimes, or, like, the next time you saw Bright Lines play, it would be a six-piece, like, orchestral rock and roll show, like, with a violin and a string bass, and, you know, it was, like, you never really knew what you were going to get when you saw Bright Lines, and that's the way it was for, really, a couple of years, and then... within the last couple, it's really settled down into the same crew.
Yeah.
And our first real show was at the High Dive, in Fremont. And that was a 5-piece band. And of those, only myself and my brother are still in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And then within, you know, very soon we were headlining the Tractor on like a Thursday or Friday night, you know, like pretty early on.
Well, that's awesome.
It was awesome.
It's gotta feel good.
And then it became enough of a, you know, enough of a thing that people would actually want to be in the band. I didn't have to beg my friends to come and play with me. You know, there were people who were like, oh yeah, I've seen that name. Like, or, you know, like my friends would be like, hey, you're playing the Tractor, like, this is kind of legit.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah, so, you know,
that's a great feeling when people actually go like, oh, this is a real thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because
okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I know that feeling.
I think that there's, you know, I think there are as many musicians in Seattle as there are people, and more bands than there are people.
Uh-huh,
because
uh-huh.
Everybody's in two bands, so,
yeah
right. So I think that it's hard to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff in a certain way. And so,
well, there's a lot to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. And
there's
so
a lot
my
of stuff coming out all the
my
time.
My method of just like booking shows kind of ended up working out, because it meant that soon enough we were playing shows that legitimized the band. And then we played a show with a band that no longer is around, but I kind of stole the drummer / musician from that band.
What band was that?
It was a band called Pomerantz. We actually played a show with them, and then I was like, that guy rules. And then my brother is a drummer, and he left to go to Thailand for 6 months, and mm-hmm. I brought on their drummer for the time that he was away. And then in the meantime, his band broke up. And when my brother came back, he stayed on. So we had, our whole band are multi-instrumentalists.
Oh, cool. And so yeah.
Ben, my brother, plays drums, and he also joined in, you know, and he would split time, play guitar or bass. And same thing with Stanley, who's the other drummer, and he'll play guitar
or
bass.
Oh, wow.
And then my friend Graham, who I met at Evergreen, actually 10 years ago or whatever, uh-huh. 13 years ago.
Yeah, the hippie school.
That hippie school, and brought that hippie on, and he's great, and he plays mostly bass in the band, but uh-huh. he also plays guitar, and he can throw down some drums too.
Fantastic.
So it's a really fun crew, and we've been almost 2 years, just the four of us. So it's been a really prosperous time in terms of writing, and I think that we've really cemented a lot of things.
Yeah. Is it shared writing duties on this as well?
It's
or are you the chief writer?
I would say I'm the chief writer.
Okay.
I wrote all the lyrics and most all of the music. I credit the band for arranging. I think that's a really fair. Uh-huh. They definitely have put a lot of work into making the songs what they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I could not have done it without them, but I definitely think that yeah, I think it's fair to call me the writer of the band.
Gotcha. Well, that's fantastic, man. And this is this the debut album?
Yeah, we released an EP a couple years ago that was mostly demos, and it featured a lineup that didn't really sound like Brightlines ever has. It was there was one track on there that I would say reflected the way we actually sounded at the time, and then the other four were kind of real rough, mostly singer-songwritery, but also had a violin and string bass on it, and so it just sounded much folkier than we sounded live.
We were
back then even like a rock and roll-y band, but we just sounded like a folky on the EP. It was I'm still proud of it. I think it's a pretty good little EP, but it didn't sound like we did even then, and certainly not the way we do now.
Sure.
And this is what I think of as actually our kind of coming out as a band. This is our debut full length record, and it reflects writing that I've done over the course of many years. Some of these songs I wrote, you know, 5-6 years ago, and some of them I wrote a few weeks before we recorded them. But that's just kind of, it's,
I love the way that works out sometimes.
Yeah,
totally.
They were all kind of, they all have really important contributions from the three other members of the band.
Yeah.
I think that it's really the first time that people can listen to the record and hear what we sound like.
Yeah, well, that's great, Zach. Thank you once again for coming into the backyard and chatting with me for a little while.
Thanks so much for having me.
I think you're welcome. And this is it's a solid debut LP.
Thank you,
man. Yeah. So where can people get this, and where would you like people to get it?
Well, that's a really good question. Because it definitely is everywhere on the internet that you can, you know, you can find it on iTunes and Amazon and all that stuff.
But, okay.
Bandcamp is, I think, the friendliest online place to buy music from artists, because they give the biggest chunk to the actual artist.
Totally. So
I always encourage people to do that. And then you can if you're interested in FLAC files or WAV files, like higher quality digital sound, you can get those on Bandcamp as opposed to
iTunes.
Oh,
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
I thought it was all just MP3.
No, you can choose that. And actually, I think you can get, different you know, like if you want to get FLAC and MP3, you know, MP3s to throw on your phone or whatever, you can do that.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And then it'll be at all the little Seattle record stores, and
locally you can get your hand on a hard copy or order it from you guys.
Yeah, right? And you'll find all that info on our website or on Bandcamp.
Right, which is brightlinesband.com.
Yeah, and bright is BRITE.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
Don't fuck that up.
That's in order to make it more Googleable, but I really like the way that the words line up visually.
Yeah.
The five letters and five letters and the repetition of the I's and the E's. And...
Well, we'll have to get you back on the show to talk about your OCD when it comes to lining up words. Zach Gore of Brightlines, like we said, you can get the album now, and it's fantastic, and I can't wait for you guys to hear the whole thing. Zach, thank you once again. And then where can we find you guys online? You guys got Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff?
We got Facebook and Twitter. I think it's Bright, just BRITELINES on Facebook. And on Twitter, it's Brightlines Band.
Brightlines Band. Okay. Well, thanks once again, man. Did you have a good time?
I did. Yeah. Right. It was pretty pretty easy, pretty chill.
See? You should probably start listening to the show.
I definitely will.
All right. Thanks, Zach. All right, folks. Wasn't that a great chat with Mr. Zach Gore? Go check out his band, Bright Lines, at brightlinesband.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter. Give him some love over there. Get your hands on this album when we arrive. It's pretty damn good, man. Thank you guys so much for listening this week. we had a great time. Great time. And check it out. We got our second installment of the Air Raid Roundtable coming up later this week, Wednesday. What will that be? What the hell date will that be? I am so not ready for this. June 10th, Roundtable number 2 with guest interviewer Stephanie Drury. She's been on this show before. You may know her from Stuff Christian Culture Likes and Fake Mark Driscoll. She's going to be talking to none other than Lindy West and also Ijoma Oluo, both amazing writers and amazing figures in the feminist movement, and strong opinionators on things like Twitter and Facebook and all that. So going to be a very, very interesting chat. It's already been recorded. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. It's fantastic. And definitely one of those things that I should not be involved in. And getting those three women together was amazing. Nothing short of amazing. So tune in for that. The Roundtable number 2 coming on June 10th. Okay, you can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes. And if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Just takes a couple seconds. Give us a little star rating there. Make sure it's 5 stars, of course. We're also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, and Cairo Radio apps. Or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. You can also access our archives, all 252 episodes of the Air Raid podcast, with people like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Chris Walla of Death Cab for Cutie. It's all there, folks. All right. Twitter handle is at Air Raid Net, or email me at aaron@air-raid.net. Remember to take the pledge and tell somebody you like about the show. All right, here's your inspirational quote of the week, as said by a 4-year-old.
Correction does much, but encouragement does more.
Very, very good, Tatum. I'm so proud of this little girl, man. She is just the light of my life. All right, folks, thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a great week. We'll be back next Monday with an all-new episode of the Air Raid podcast for you. Have a good one, everybody. I know you know all the things I could say, cause you feel the same way as I feel them, trembling in my stomach as they grow. I find it unfair that while we feel the same ways at the ends of our days, we lost us somewhere and we can't as day drifts into night, resentment and doubt, poison in the air. And somehow it's starting to make sense that all your stories lacked an end. They started out so strong, try and leave behind all the tears that you cried. And maybe someday all the stories you tell will unravel and swell, and you'll forget it been any other way. And somehow it's starting to make sense that all your lacked an end. They started out so strong, all falling short of denouement. Will I never need one like I need now? No, I never need one like I need now. So clean up your room, up your back, say your goodbyes. Check into your flight, enjoy your last meal, put my letter aside. That all your stories lacked an end.
started out so strong, all falling short of a denouement. Well, I never need one like I need now. No, I never need one like I need now. Okay, here it goes. I could reset a thousand lines, never send my replies, 'cause I know you know all the things I could say, 'cause you feel the same ways, feel them trembling in my stomach as they grow.